Hello! Welcome to the podcast Dishes of the World, in which we retrace the history of iconic dishes in different parts of the world. Today, we are going to talk about the plov of Central Asia. If you don't know what it is, don't panic. I'm going to give you the recipe, but also the origin, or rather the origins, of the dish, because it is the representative and catalyst of cultural exchanges in Central Asia. But above all, it's a dish that brings people together. Shared in holiday times as much as in everyday life, by city dwellers as nomads, it seems inconceivable to eat it alone. It is also a great symbol of spirituality, unity, and identity. But stop chatting and start cooking. Let's taste together the plov, the great unifier of Central Asia. Before giving you the recipe, let's dwell a little on the name of the dish. Plov is a Russian word, which would probably come from Sanskrit pulaka, meaning rice ball, or Persian pilau for rice. This Russian name can be explained by the colonial past of the region. Indeed, the great game of the 19th century, that to say the colonialist expansion of Russia and the United Kingdom in Asia, marks the beginning of Russian influence in the region. This influence will only grow with the Russian Revolution of 1917 and the creation of the USSR in 1922, since the five Central Asian republics that are Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Turkmenistan were part of it. The people of these regions were displaced, murdered, and forced to abandon their lifestyles, beliefs, and cultures in favor of the Soviet model. So they learned the Russian language, hence the use of the word plov to designate the dish. However, and this is what marks the wealth of the exchanges of the region, this word has constantly been modified and reworked by different cultures. For example, we speak of palov in the Uzbek language, of pilav or oshi palav in Tajik, ashwi in Kyrgyz, ash meaning food in Turkish. The name of the dish alone shows us how far it has traveled. But the recipe, or rather the recipes, is just as revealing of the plurality of encounters and adaptations of the different populations of the region. There are indeed no fewer than 700 variations. The essential element of the plov is not an ingredient, but a kazan, a large cauldron in which the food will be cooked. It must be cooked in large quantities and outdoors, hence the use of the cauldron to keep the cooking going even when the weather is very bad. In a pan or a pot, the plov will certainly burn. As for the ingredients, it is meat, often sheep's tail, but it can also be pork, beef, or poultry, with rice fried in oil or fat, vegetables, often chickpeas, onions, carrots and garlic, and aromatics and spice. What a tasty meal! Aren't you hungry just by listening of all that? So there are almost as many recipes as there are families. That said, the nationality of the original dish is disputed. Plov dates back to time immemorial. Legend has it that Alexander the Great, having tasted it during his conquest of Asia in the 4th century, was so fond of it that he ordered his entire army to eat it regularly so that his soldiers could regain strength. He is even said to have taken the recipe back to Greece. But it was Ibn Sina, also known as Avicen, a 10th century Persian physician who lived near Bukhara in present-day Uzbekistan, who is said to have first recorded the recipe. This is why Uzbekistan claims the dish as a national specialty. That said, the reality is more complex, since one of the characteristics of Central Asia is that many people live and move in the same territory, making the region an extremely rich transcultural hub. It is therefore impossible to prove that the dish is Uzbek rather than Tajik, for example. However, one thing is certain, it's a dish from Central Asia. But then, why claim national paternity for a dish that by definition is the fruit of movements and exchanges between a myriad of different cultures and populations? This could be explained by the fact that during the Soviet era, the borders that now separate the five republics were arbitrarily demarcated by Russia, without taking into account the complexity and multiplicity of the ethnic groups living there. The goal was to centralize the various ethnic groups into smaller groups, and to put each of these groups into a respective nation-state so that each would fit into the USSR in a very specific way, and also to hierarchize the different ethnic groups and Russify them. This idea was transitory and not an end in itself, since the ultimate goal of the USSR was brotherhood among all nations, which involved a kind of vast Soviet empire, so borders were just a logistical means of achieving its ends. However, the Soviet Empire fell in 1991, but the borders are still present. The former Soviet republics therefore have to rebuild themselves with these arbitrary borders, without historical or cultural legitimacy. The USSR, but also the Western states later, pushed to maintain these nation-states by creating from scratch an history and customs specific to each of these countries. Having a strong but fictional national identity is therefore a means of coping with this drama, legitimizing one's nation and attempting to rebuild one's self. Hence the desire of the paternity of the plov for Uzbekistan. But beyond the difference in terms of claiming its paternity, plov is above all a great unifier. We have seen it. It has been enjoyed throughout Central Asia for many centuries. And it is enjoyed by both sedentary and nomadic alike, and equally enjoyed by the rich and the poor, in the countryside as well as in the cities. Indeed, due to its different variations, the dish is very easily adaptable, is very nutritious without weighing on the stomach. But what makes it so convivial is that it is both an everyday dish and a festive meal. It is cooked at birthdays, births, and circumcision ceremonies, but also at weddings, funerals, and the end of the Ramadan. On a daily basis, we eat it every Thursday. It is indeed the Day of the Dead, and this allows us to gather for a meal with the loved ones that are not there anymore. But outside the region, it is also a dish much loved by Central Asian diasporas in the West, allowing its members to gather, exchange, and share a common identity and roots. The dish, therefore, has a very strong symbolic and spiritual potential. It is synonymous with cultural identity, conviviality, sharing, solidarity, and unity. As such, it is a noble dish that honors the guests one receives. Moreover, it is seen as very rude to refuse a plov that is served to you. For all these reasons, plov is a symbol of Central Asia and was recognized as such by UNESCO Intangible Cultural Heritage of Humanity in 2016. Plov is also given other symbolic virtues. Considered as a viril dish, presumably because of the legend of Alexander the Great, it is said to be a symbol of fertility. Tradition holds that in order to have a boy, a pregnant woman must regularly cook a plov for her partner. In a word, plov is therefore a dish of exchange at all levels. Cultural exchange first, linked to the movement of the dish throughout Central Asia and throughout the world via the diasporas. Exchange between social classes second, since all members of society, regardless of their level or their way of life, have the same love of the plov. Finally, community exchange, since it allows us to enjoy a moment of life with our dear ones. I hope you had a great time listening to this podcast and it has made your mouth watering. See you next week to discover a new traditional speciality from a region of the world. Have a good day and above all, bon appétit!